It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and live from Studio D, this is the Socrates Exchange. Most of us can't imagine life without modern technology. Our computers, telephones, televisions, washing machines, CD players, iPods, and dozens of other inventions that make our lives more convenient, efficient, and provide access to a universe of information and entertainment. Technology has also meant medical advances that have saved many a life, and transportation options that have allowed us to expand our horizons, even travel the world. But while these innovations would be difficult for many of us to give up, we recognize their drawbacks. Cars and planes that pollute the air, television and other electronic entertainment that keep us indoors and sedentary, even the simple washing machine, while a huge time saver, also pushes us to buy more clothes and wash them more frequently. So overall, has technology helped or hurt us? That's the question we're pondering this hour on the Socrates Exchange. We'd like you to be involved. Call in the exchange number 1-800-892-6477. What do you think of this question? Has technology helped or hurt us? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. The Socrates Exchange is funded in part by Bank of America and the New Hampshire Humanities Council. We have a live audience before us today in our Studio D, including members of Concord, Hopkinton, and Gorham High Schools. I'm joined by one of our two philosophers for the Socrates Exchange, Max Latona, an associate professor of philosophy at St. Anselm College. And Max, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Laura. Good morning.
Well, Max, before we begin with our audience here and our callers, let's just put some parameters around this discussion. We're talking largely this hour about modern technology, you know, not the invention of the wheel or the broom or the bucket.
That's right. So the primary question, again, that we'd like to address today is, has technology helped or hurt us? Now, from one vantage point, where technology refers to any object of fabrication, any tool or implement that we might use to get about our day, the answer seems obvious. Of course it has helped us. For without any technology whatsoever, without knives and hammers, wheels and levers, humans would be rooting around in the grubs for dirt and curling up in the caves for warmth. However, as you mentioned, from the vantage point of modern technology, the answer seems not so clear at all. From electrical lighting and mechanical plumbing and heating, washing machines, dryers, refrigerators, dishwashers, to automobiles, televisions, computers, faxes, cell phones, and iPods, to say nothing of industrial machinery or modern weaponry, almost no aspect of our waking day remains untouched by technology. And there's no question that all these machines and appliances and tools and gadgets have made our lives, our tasks at home and in work easier, speedier, and more efficient. We are incredibly more effective now in getting things done than humans have ever been throughout history. But the question can and should be asked, has this explosion of technology into our lives made our lives better? So one question we might think about today in this hour is there a tipping point with regard to technological progress beyond which technology no longer helps us but begins interfering with the human activities that are fundamental to a life lived well? What are those activities that can get distorted by technology? What is that tipping point, and have we already reached it? So that's just one question to get us started.
All right, and let's get started with our studio audience right away. Max, good morning. Thanks for coming out.
Hi, I'm Katie White, and I'm a senior at Hopkinton High School. And I think that it depends on the kind of technology. I think that medical technology and obviously like transportation, like cars and airplanes, I think that those are good types of technology that have helped us. I think that things like Facebook and MySpace, texting, I think that while they can be fun and while they can connect us to people we might not talk to as often if we didn't have those technologies, I think that they do hurt our social life because we're engaging more in like texting with each other than we are like getting together in person. So
stay here with us, Katie. Go ahead, Max.
Well, thank you, Katie. That's a very interesting comment. I think most of your peers would probably argue with you and say that texting and Facebook and all of these electronic forms of communication, email, have actually helped their social life. And you're arguing that they don't. So you're making the assumption that somehow face-to-face human communication is extremely important. Would you say that?
I would say that. I think that if people are going to argue that it's helped their social situation, I think it really just kind of, it's really superficial, mm. I guess. Like, I don't think that it's as real as being with someone in person. And, I mean, you can say anything online and no one will know if you're lying or not. But when you're face-to-face, you see, like, their facial expression and you can tell if they're being sincere with you or not. And when you go online, you know, you have, like, that opportunity to meet people, like, in chat rooms who you don't already know. You can put on any kind of facade and be whoever you want to be, and it's not real. So if people are liking you for what you're not, then...
Hmm. Very good. So, but let me ask you this. Is it, you use Facebook or email or text messaging? Can I ask
I
you
do.
That? And are you able to communicate with more people than you would have if you didn't have those electronic devices?
I don't think that I would say that that's true, because the people that I talk to online are people I already know. And the people that I talk to that I don't know, I would never refer to them as true friends or people that are really important in my life. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, stay with us, Katie. You mentioned automobiles as something that has obviously helped us. Do you know that there are carless communities springing up around the world? One in Germany where cars are banned, one that's being built in California outside of Oakland. These people seem to think that cars are somehow destructive to our communities and our way of life. What would you say to these people? How have cars really helped us?
Well, I would say that I hope they're using some form of public transportation then, if they're not using cars. Because, I mean, we all know that nowadays you have to get around, like, to get to work and to get to school. Like, you can't just always walk. So you need a car or you need a bus or, you know.
Okay, one thing for you to think about and then we'll let you go is that one of the reasons we need cars to get to work and to other places is because we live so far from them. And the reason why we live so far from them is perhaps because we have automobiles that will help us get there. If we didn't have them, we might live closer to our friends, family, and our work. And therefore not need cars.
Well, it's a chicken and egg thing, Max. And Katie, thank you so much for being the first to come
thank
out.
You, Katie.
It's our Socrates Exchange today on The Exchange. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We also have a live audience here in Studio D, and let's go to another member of that audience. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Hi, my name is Dorothy England. I'm from Hopkinton High School also, and I'm also a senior. I believe that it really depends on the individual, how they use technology. It depends on if you use it in excess, then I think it definitely can be harmful. But I think that goes for anything. I really believe that moderation is key. So if you use technology maybe as guidelines or as a tool, then I don't think it's very harmful.
Thank you, Dorothy. How many hours a day do you think is okay to use technology?
Well, for a teenager, I guess, like with your schoolwork, I think maybe 2.5 hours, I guess, or, well, okay. I guess. But
so there should be other things that you're doing that are non-technological, that are healthy and important to human life.
Definitely.
What kinds of things are those?
Well, I think engaging in sports or physical activity, maybe eating with your family, connecting with your friends. Even
in a face-to-face way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. And do you think there's a problem in modern society today that people are no longer doing those things with as much frequency? They're spending too much time with technology?
Like I said before, I really think it depends on the individual. Some people do isolate themselves and they use technology with all their free time. They go online, you know, play games, watch TV. The internet has made it easily accessible to do so. But I believe that some people don't always do that. They actually go out and make an effort to speak with others or communicate or do something more meaningful.
Dorothy, can I ask you something, too? Excuse me for jumping in here. And we got lots of postings on the Socrates Exchange site, and a lot of them said exactly what you're saying, that it depends on what technology you're talking about. It depends on how you use it. But can you say, Dorothy, overall, the good outweighs the bad or the bad outweighs the good? Can you say that?
I guess I think that I guess I think with more technologies coming out, I think that eventually it will be the bad way outweighs the good.
Dorothy, let me ask you something. Have you ever, do you live in a neighborhood?
Yes.
Have you ever walked down your street in the evening with a dog or a friend?
Yeah, my mom and I have walked down our road before.
Have you noticed the blue lights in everybody's living rooms that are flashing coming from the televisions?
No, actually. I mean, I've noticed it in a few houses, but not every house. Like maybe for every three houses I see, one of them will have.
Well, some scholars have noted, Robert Putnam is one of them in his book Bowling Alone, that the modern television, ever since the 1950s, has perhaps been one of the causes for a decrease in social involvement, community involvement, political involvement, club involvement. When people didn't have televisions, they went outside their homes for entertainment and for association with people. And would you agree with him that the television and perhaps even the computer now are causing us to spend less time outside our homes in evenings to seek entertainment?
I definitely think it's a very temptatious thing to go on the computer, you know. Like, it's easier, you know. Sometimes it's easier just to, like, relax and just watch something rather than go out and interact with people because that takes effort. But I do think that you can learn from technology, and with that you can communicate with other people about it. And even the radio is a form of technology, and listening to that, like, I know listening to NHPR, like, there's topics that I hear, and I can talk to other people about it, and that engages conversation.
Well, thank you, Dorothy.
Dorothy, thank you so much, and we hope to hear from more members of our live audience here in Studio D coming up. You know, you mentioned Max Bob Putnam, and he posted on the Socrates Exchange site. He said, historians of the social effects of technology have often noted that it is very hard to guess the long-run social effects of specific technological changes, especially when that technology is rapidly evolving. As I said a decade ago in Bowling Alone, insofar as the internet becomes a nifty TV, that is another screen we use for passively absorbing entertainment, it will probably hurt social interaction. But insofar as it becomes a nifty telephone, a device that becomes part of our web of connection with other real people, it may actually help. More postings, more comments, your phone calls are coming up next on the Socrates Exchange. So stay with us.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from UR members and Brewster Academy in Wolfboro, an innovator in secondary education, where students live, learn, and lead in a college preparatory school environment, brewsteracademy.org. And Lewis Carno and Company Communications and Public Relations, saluting the Courier Museum of Art Exposition, Brett Weston, Out of the Shadow through January 3rd, courier.org. More of the Socrates Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio and at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the latest developments in the war in Afghanistan. New Hampshire weather today, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain in most of the state, turning mostly sunny this afternoon in the North Country, highs today mid to upper 40s. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, lows tonight mid-20s north and upper 30s in the south. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our Socrates Exchange, where once a month we examine one question using the Socratic method of asking questions and more questions. This month, that question is, has technology helped or hurt us? We have a studio audience here with us in Studio D, and we invite their comments. Let's hear from you, too. 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. My co-host is Max Latona, Associate Professor of Philosophy at St. Anselm College and an advisor to us here on the Socrates Exchange. And Max, let's go right back to our audience. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. My name is Alexander Hubbard. I'm a senior from Hopkinton High School. In regards with technology, earlier we talked about how because cars have made us live farther away and all of that, I find that cars can help and hurt us. It's a lot of back and forth because cars helps us get to work, it helps us get to school, all those places, and then we find more things to do, and so it allows us to do more things in one day than if we walk to school or walk to work. And sometimes living closer to the area that we work in or go to school might overpopulate because of our population now.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Alexander. Let me mention two things. One, I had the good fortune recently to visit Europe, in particular the Netherlands, and I was astonished by the prevalence of bicycles there and how much people bike to work, take their children to daycare with their bikes, and don't use cars. And it's a way of life over there in such a way that they've adjusted all of the things that they do so that they don't need to build roadways into suburbs, sprawling suburbs, but live closer to their work, their friends, their family. So I think to some degree it may just be a lifestyle adjustment and something that might be very healthy, and that's the reason I think that many of these communities are trying to build villages and towns without cars. One other thing I want to point out that I have noticed, and I think a lot of parents will agree with me, that our children play less and less on the streets with their friends. More and more we're driving them to play dates or to soccer practice or baseball practice. We spend more time in the car, and there's less unstructured free time. And part of the reason for that may be, again, that their schoolmates and their friends don't live in the same vicinity. So you could argue that cars have somehow destroyed our community, our sense of community. Many of us don't know our neighbors because we don't work with them, our children don't go to school with them, and so on and so forth. What would you think about those?
I would have to agree in the sense that it probably has destroyed some of what we do. But
there are obvious ways in which cars have helped us. For instance, taking someone who's sick to the hospital, getting our fire trucks to our homes when they're burning down.
Yes. I agree with that.
So if you had a choice between living in a community with cars or without, which would you choose?
I would choose with cars because, again, we can get places more. We can get to more places every day. We can do more activities every day. We can go wherever we want in cars. In the lesser technologies, it takes more time, so we can't do what we want to do.
Yeah.
Last
comment for you, and that is I'm not sure that we spend less time traveling now than people did in the past before they had cars. We have, cars can get us to places much faster, but I think as a result we live much further away and therefore spend as much time in the car. But that's something just to think about.
Alexander, thank you very much for being here. And I want to go to our callers as well. The number here on the Socrates Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Again, the question we're asking this month is, has technology helped or hurt us? Our caller is Bruce from Kittery, Maine. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Max and Laura. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I'd like to address the issue of the tipping point, if you will, because I think in examining the emergence of technology over the last century or so, we've seen essentially exponential growth in technology. And prior to, say, the turn of the 20th century, at least at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, things were not moving along so quickly. The real question, I think, is that as the power that both individuals and collectively we wield with the growing technology continues to expand exponentially, our wisdom to wield that power appears at best to be growing maybe linearly, and some would argue that it hasn't grown at all even since the day of Socrates. And so the real problem is that if we do not wise up and learn how to best choose what technologies we should allow to develop and which we, for the benefit of society, need to keep a lid on, eventually we will find, rogue nations possessing nuclear weapons and other issues of highly destructive technologies, which will produce some fairly catastrophic results.
So, Bruce, our wisdom and our prudence are not growing as fast as our technology is.
Not by a long shot.
Well, stay on the line with us, and go ahead, Max Latona.
Well, it's hard for me to argue with Bruce. I think I agree with him wholeheartedly. But let me ask you this, Bruce. You mentioned modern weaponry. Nuclear weapons are an obvious example of a case where technology has surpassed, if you will, our moral understanding or our wisdom. Can you think of any other examples?
Other examples besides nuclear weapons?
Yeah.
Well, certainly, with the advent of the awareness of global warming and other potential dangers to the environment, many years ago, I would have hoped that we would have realized that we could not continue on the fossil fuel road indefinitely and would need to, change to a more sustainable form of energy policy. And that has not happened either, both for economic reasons, certainly, but I think regardless of the motivations, an examination would say if it's potentially lethally harmful to all of humanity and a lot of the innocent species otherwise populating the planet, that, that's certainly another example where we have allowed it to get out of hand and should have pulled back the reins on that technology a long time ago.
Yeah, you speak about pulling back the reins or keeping a lid on technological production. Are you talking about legal remedies here, laws that prevent us from developing forms of technology or using them?
Well, that's, I think, a very good question, is if a group of people who are working to develop a new technology, some group of engineers somewhere who can say in 5 years we will be at this next level, who is it that ultimately has the moral responsibility for dictating whether they move forward with the development of a new technology or not? It seems that there is no restraint at this point.
Well, right. If I could ask you a question,
any
Bruce,
technology development.
What are the consequences to stepping back? Lives saved perhaps by medical technology, horizons expanded by travel. How do you step back, and what are the consequences if you do?
I think you need to step back only from, I can't say you can step back from development of technology, but you can step back from misuse of technology, and maybe through laws that is the way one would need to do that. Because you don't know necessarily when a technology is being developed, whether it has positive or negative, and often is the case potential for both very good and very negative uses. And it's once it's developed that we need to say, okay, we are not going to allow, as a nation, this technology to be used for destructive purposes.
Well, thank you, Bruce. I just one quick comment for you, and that is there's an old bromide that a weapon has never been invented or developed that hasn't been used, right? So I would worry that we have freedom of development, but we try to limit the use, that might not work very well. That is to
say, therein lies the problem.
Right.
Bruce, thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Our number here in the Socrates Exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. The question we're asking this month on the Socrates Exchange is, has technology helped or hurt us? Now, last week, this question of technology was discussed at Sauhegan High School in Amherst, New Hampshire. The three senior ethics seminars at the school spent an hour each moderating their own Socratic discussion on the morality of technology and whether it has helped to hurt us. Exchange executive producer Keith Shields sat in on all three classes and brings us this montage of those discussions.
All right, guys, we're here to discuss whether society's use of technology is ultimately moral, whether that technology ultimately hurts or helps us, and when and where we see this. And with that, we'll open it up for discussion.
I think technology is a good thing because it makes everything a lot easier and more comfortable. Like last year during the ice storm, we didn't have electricity or heat and everything was just miserable.
But you could also use that argument as a bad thing, because that proved that as like humans, we can't live without technology. We didn't know how to live without power for a week and a half or so, and we were freezing cold. We hated it. Without the technology, we just didn't know how to like live our everyday lives like we would have if we were centuries ago living without it.
But as human beings, isn't it kind of bound that we have technology? If it wasn't for technology, we'd still be living like cavemen. You know what I mean? So we're placed on Earth to do something. I think we've done that through technology.
I also think that technology is kind of at a battle right now with the natural world because there's only so much that our planet can handle. Right now, people who are born in this generation are going to live till they're 100. And although that may seem like a good thing, our planet is not going to be able to hold that many people. So although right now we're seeing the immediate benefits of technology, in the long run, I don't think the natural world is going to be able to hold out.
The only problem with taking that one step back is that technology, like culture, is an accumulation. So I see technology often goes in a linear path. Like you can pretty much trace it from, you know, stone tools all the way to where we have now. So I feel to take that one step back would be harder to do, certainly, than the giant leap forward. That's the one thing that concerns me, but I think it is necessary to make technology ultimately moral.
We can't, like, avoid technology ever, like, especially in this day and age. We can't avoid it. It's everywhere. Like, there's a TV in, like, almost every household. There's computers in every household. Like, I know I have, like, 5 TVs in my house. So, like, we've become, like, incredibly dependent on it, but it's difficult to, like, veer away from it after, like, all of the advances that have, like, happened over the centuries.
Well, I think the purpose that the Internet was initially created for was the spread of ideas, and I'd have to say it so far has succeeded at that. Whether or not those ideas are true or not is, like, something you have to take with a grain of salt. But there's things like protests in other countries that would have been clamped down by, like, the government. Like, the protests in Iran, for example, back in June. Like, people wouldn't have known the extent of that had, like, people not had, like, cell phone cameras and video cameras that they could, like, record these events with. So it kind of helps you realize, like, a more global perspective of, like, what you're looking at.
What about the point of once you become a closer society through technology, like, what do you think of the value of face-to-face communication and stuff? Because if we're always communicating through things like Facebook or IM or cell phone texting, like, how do you feel as far as the value of contact between people?
I've noticed that even with me, like through text messaging and stuff, it's harder for me to connect with people face-to-face because you don't have the ability to say whatever you say and think about what you're going to say. And then somebody can read a text message and then misinterpret completely what you're saying.
I think it's become kind of detrimental also to, like, we've definitely worsened our grammar because of technology and because of the use of chat and Facebook and just kind of using, like, abbreviations now more than, like, actually writing out the entire word has definitely, like, it's worsened our grammar.
How much control we consider okay. In the past, obviously, we've always been gaining more control over our world, but, I mean, now it's, like, something we've never experienced before to the point of being able to control natural events. I mean, NASA just fired a rocket at the moon, and basically we can create our own storm clouds and blizzards. We can control precipitation. It's a question of what does it mean when we're no longer at least heavily affected by natural factors, when we actually have complete control over what's affecting us. Where do we go after that?
What I struggle with is that with technology seems to come control and power, and I'm struggling with the fact that people are sort of playing God in a way, like they're creating storms, they're making babies that would have otherwise not been created. So is it immoral to be essentially playing the role of God?
I would almost argue that people were thinking the same thing when instead of going out to kill a deer to bring home for food, they started planting seeds in rows and in their own places and watering it. Is that on the same level of change as we are now, just in terms of, you know, they went from what we would consider primitive now to, you know, the next step in evolution? We're always asking ourselves, is it okay? And I don't see it stopping.
I want to thank you guys for sharing your ideas, and it was a pleasure.
Nice job, guys.
Yeah.
That discussion with Sauhegan High School students was produced by Exchange executive producer Keith Shields. And Max Latona, let's go right back to our studio audience here. Good morning. Thanks for coming out for the Socrates Exchange.
Good morning. My name is Andrew Dove of Contucoc, New Hampshire. And technology's utmost goal is, you know, to free up time. Like, we have dishwashers to free up time to wash clothes. Now we have clothes washers to free up time to do something else. We have cars to free up time to, I don't know, mow the lawn or something, such as cars get us from, you know, A to B. What I'm wondering is, how much time do we really want to have to do what? Technology has done jobs for us, and things like TVs and cell phones, you know, that we have technology to, you know, use in the time we have to do nothing.
So you're suggesting that some of the things that technology is doing for us now are better off perhaps being done by hand, that there's something intrinsically worthwhile about scrubbing your shirt on a washboard as opposed to plopping it in the washing machine?
You know, somewhat. That technology is very useful, and it's great not to have to do those things by hand. But when we start making technology that is really excessive, like, you know, cell phones to talk to your friends all the time, you know, that is a little excessive. Like, we have a great piece of technology to use when we have free time, like a bike. You could go ride it at the skate park, or, you know, a motorcycle or something. That's it.
Max, I've heard people say this, that, you know, we have technology and it frees up some time, but then we just fill it with more technology. So you almost get into this circular thing.
Absolutely. And I do ancient Greek philosophy, and it's remarkable how much leisure time they appeared to have with so little technology. You know, the Greeks spent their time in the marketplace, the agora, talking to one another, doing business, listening to great speeches of orators. And they didn't have computers, cell phones, televisions, automobiles, etc. So it appears that there is not a direct correlation between how much technology we have and how much leisure time we have. In fact, there may be an inverse correlation. Yeah.
Well, they had a great populous nation. They had a lot of times owners of farms hired people to work the fields for them.
Point.
So when they don't have to be working the fields themselves, you know, they're just raking in profit. They have you know, enough money and time to go spend at the market buying, you know, goods and, you know, fraternizing with each other and whatnot.
Well, you bring up a good point. Maybe it's only the aristocratic class back then that had the leisure time. Everyone else was slaving away.
Technology gives us all a chance to, you know, almost be part of the aristocratic class, to give us less work to do, kind of like them.
Let me just challenge you. So would you prefer to live in a community that had less technology, say the Amish community or a primitive or tribal society of some sort or other?
To tell the truth, I would not mind living in an Amish community, minus the religion. But I do like the fact of, you know, living off the land, taking care of things on your own without having to rely on, you know, things like electricity or, you know, different types of technology. I think it's great to be able to sustain off yourself.
Andrew, thank you so much. And we will take more comments from our audience and more of your calls, too, after a short break. 1-800-892-6477. More Socrates Exchange coming up.
Today on Word of Mouth, the debt trap. Investigative reporter Lowell Bergman helped take big tobacco down a peg. Now he's digging into claims that credit card companies are exploiting the most vulnerable consumers. He'll sort through the industry's role in the economic meltdown and reform efforts underway in Washington. I'm Virginia Prescott. Join us for Word of Mouth today at noon on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Support comes from UR members and Concord Group Insurance, a mutual company owned by their policyholders, providing auto, home, and business insurance. Information and independent agent locator at ConcordGroupInsurance.com. And S&W Sports in Concord, a full-service bicycle, ski, and snowboard shop ready for holiday gift-giving with snowboard, downhill, and cross-country ski packages. SWSports.net. It's 940. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's the Socrates Exchange today, and the question we're pondering this month is, has technology helped or hurt us? We'd like your thoughts on that. Call in 1-800-892-6477. We also have a live audience with us here in Studio D, including high school students from Concord, Hopkinton, and Gorham. And Max Latona is my co-host for this edition of the Socrates Exchange. Max, let's go back to our audience. Thanks for being here.
Ian Carlisle, and I'm from Gorham High School. I'd like to comment on something Max said earlier about kids not having enough unstructured time. That technology is structuring our life. We have to be on. We're going to have our cell phone on from 9 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night, taking messages from our friends. Then maybe we're going to the movies, or then we have a car. We have to have a car ride 20 minutes to get to the theater. Mm-hmm. That there isn't enough time to develop the skills to use unstructured time.
Yeah, so let's investigate that a little bit. How does that unstructured time help us develop as human beings, help us become more happier and fulfilled in life? What are the kinds of things we do there in that unstructured time?
I think it's the spontaneous things that we're starting to we're starting to miss out on, that we will be expecting text messages and emails, but it's not the spontaneous phone call that we're expecting anytime soon, or someone who comes to knock on the door. That there's it's the social norm now to text or email to say, hey, I'm going to come visit, instead of I'm riding my bike past and I'd just like to say hi.
Everything's planned.
Yes.
And it's spontaneous behavior with other people.
Yes.
Not by yourself? Or?
Yes, with other people. And sometimes maybe it's just by yourself. If it's instead of going on the internet, instead I go hike one of my favorite trails.
Mm-hmm. So we're less reflective, less creative, less spontaneous the more we use technology.
Yes, and I think it really hurts us as a newer generation, because as we go off to college, we find that with the less structured school atmosphere, we're having a harder time with our studies.
Yeah. One final thing, Ian. Do you find that technology is creeping into your life more and more, and that it's difficult to wean yourself from technology?
I definitely think so, because a great example is I got a laptop 2 Christmases ago, and now I spend 10 hours a day on my laptop instead of outside like I used to.
So what does that bode for the future? Something for you to think about.
I think it's going to be more structured, more time linked to our electronics, and less outside.
And Ian, I just want to jump in here with a posting from our Socrates Exchange site from Chris that kind of relates to what you're saying. He says, though, blaming technology will not solve the problem. Email isn't going away, neither is the internet. It is false to say that technology harms us in some way. What is actually harming us are the unreasonable expectations that people create for themselves and others just because technology provides them with a new capacity. He's saying then we have to put limits on it. Don't blame the technology. We have to find it within ourselves.
I agree with Chris, because I know that it takes a will to peel myself off my laptop to go and do something like ride my bike or play with my dog or go on a walk with my parents.
All right. Thank you, especially for coming all the way from Gorham. We appreciate it. Let's go to our callers again. The number 1-800-892-6477. Margot calling in from Marlow. Hi, Margot. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for the discussion. It's a great topic. There's a lot of points, but one point I'd like to put out is it's causing enslavement, because we have to keep on buying the new technology, then discarding the ones we have because they're obsolete, and then signing up to the programs such as cell phone or internet or whatever program you have to sign up to run your technology, to get the program for it. Then you're enslaved to keep on buying that program and to that company. And the factories keep generating more and more products that we have to keep on buying, and then it just never ends. And then there's also the disconnection from the real world, which is using computers and the video games and things like that, and that's causing a problem. We live in artificial worlds, and those are the main points I wanted to make.
So, Margot, stay with us. Go ahead, Max.
Oh, thank you, Margot. I think you make a great point. There is a kind of enslavement that happens to us the more and more we use technology. But, you know, are we perhaps being too nostalgic in some ways? Are we blaming technology for all of our ills and not recognizing some of the great benefits of technology? Just to give you an example, what about medical technology? You know, I have children. One child would probably not be alive right now were it not for modern technology and medicine. I'm sure you know many people whose lives have been benefited or saved by medical technology. So what about medical technology? Wouldn't that be an obvious case where it has not enslaved us, but in some ways freed us to live our lives in a healthier way?
Well, I might have an extreme view on medical technology, so I might not get into that discussion.
Well, no, we want to hear your view, Margot.
Well, I don't think all these methods, this is kind of off the point. I'm more interested in the pollution and things like that and the social problems that technology, particularly computers, cause. But for medical technology, we keep people alive longer than they would normally be alive. I see that causes a lot of problem. putting a lot of artificial devices into them, which will continue more and more. But I'm not really...
Okay.
It's not really my subject of comment, and I have extreme views on it.
Okay. Well, I think you make a good point. It may have lengthened our lives, but not necessarily benefited the quality of life. But let me go back to your earlier point. You said we're enslaved to technology. We have to buy these new things every time they come out on the market. Nobody's forcing you to buy them, Margaret.
Well, I haven't bought them. But then people have to work harder and longer hours and get into debt to buy them. And they're just really entrapping themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, Margot, thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate it. And I want to go to a member of our studio audience again. Thanks for being here. Go ahead.
My name is Natalie, and I'm a senior at Gorham High School. I'd like to go back to the efficiency part of the discussion. We create all these technologies to clean things and get our work done faster, but we just replace it with more technologies. So since we spend so much time with it, we get so dependent on it. Like, it's good to have these to make our lives easier, but at the same time, we're losing sight of, like, our natural instincts. Like, what would happen if, like, we blacked out for a day, we had no power? We need to know and remember how to get these things done without the help of technology, or else we're back to square one.
So you're pointing to a dependency that's being created by our use of technology, and this is somehow harmful to us as human beings?
Yes.
So would you advocate somehow making ourselves less dependent by shutting off our technology, learning how to wash our clothes without a washing machine, would you say that?
Yes and no. I think it's good to have these because it can make our lives easier, but at the same time, we just need to remember in case something did happen. Like, there's all this talk about the world ending, which I don't believe in. But if we, like, do get, like, power shut out or something does happen, the computers crash, like, what are we going to do without these technologies? We just need to be prepared for what could happen.
Okay, thank you.
And so overall, has technology helped or hurt us? What do you think?
I think it has helped us in the form of medicines, but it has hurt us definitely because we're becoming way too dependent on it.
Okay.
Natalie, do you think we're happier as human beings now, as individuals or communities, with technology, or we would be happier without it?
I think it depends on how the technology is used by the individual, because in some ways it can make you happier, like connecting with people you haven't in a while, and it can hurt us, like misinterpreting what people say over the internet where I am.
Well, thank you so much, Natalie, and let's go to another member of our audience. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Hi, I'm Christina Hurley, and I'm from Hopkinton High School. And I want to go back to the medication, and I think medication has hurt the new generations because if you think of back in time, like a long time ago in class, Andrew had said something about natural selection, and if you weren't that bird with a long enough beak to crack that nut, you weren't going to live. You weren't going to mate, and you weren't going to have healthy babies. So if you think about it, if we're going to pump people onto medication with all this new technology, these people might have medical problems that aren't the best thing for your for your children. And if that child inherits those genes, and then that child might have another kid with a person with bad genes, then we're just going to have a bunch of deformed people that are on medication for the rest of their life.
Well, that's pretty harsh. So you're suggesting that people who have medical problems are better off dead than... than being kept alive with technology?
No,
all the people with diabetes, for instance, would not be alive if they didn't have insulin and insulin pumps?
Well, you have to look at it as, like a lot of people are saying, the new processed foods cause autism. They cause, like, other things like that. But, I mean, I'm not saying they should all just die. I'm not trying to say that. But I'm saying that if we hadn't pumped them full of insulin, maybe then so many people wouldn't have diabetes. I don't know if it's genetics.
Oh,
but
I see.
You're
suggesting
kind of started a cycle.
That some of the very problems that we're solving with medical technology have been caused by other forms of technology in society,
yeah,
including artificial food production and stuff.
And with the vaccines, like my mom won't let me get the H1N1 vaccine because I don't know if you've heard of that cheerleader that can't function anymore because she got it, and a lot of kids are getting sick from it. And I just don't believe that medical technology is the best thing. It's great, like if one of my relatives got really sick and they get fixed and they can see their grandchildren grow up and graduate college, but that's not how it's supposed to be.
What about other technologies, Christina? We've talked about communications technologies. We've talked about transportation.
Well, with cars, like, I think cars are really important. Yes, they're bad for the environment, but, you know, it helps me get to that mountain that I want to hike with my friends. I don't like I like computers, but then again, I think that computers also hurt us if and games like I've heard kids say that because they don't get any text, they don't have friends. And I think that's very sad, because if you don't have friends to text you, maybe you should go out and make some friends.
Yeah, good.
Thank you for coming out. We've got lots of people who want to participate this morning. And I want to thank again Gorham, Concord, and Hopkinton High Schools for being here. Go ahead. Thanks for coming to the microphone.
Thanks. Tyler St. Gelais from Concord High School. I believe there's different situations where technology could help us, and there's different situations where technology could hurt us. Mostly it comes down to the people. When it comes to our language, I believe that we're getting poorer and poorer when it comes to our words. Like, now that we have texting and everything, we're using slang on everything instead of saying, like, ha, or LOL, and all these different words that are going on. And I remember last year we were watching these videos and how people in China are starting to say the English language better than we are. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of like, wow, we've come down to this. And it's just all about, like, the computers and everything that we've had, trying to get, like, time and everything. And there's just different situations where we are just getting poorer and poorer when it comes to everything that we've done.
Tyler, I have noticed, I think, some of the effects of text messaging and email in my classroom and in the papers my students write. So I think this is a good point. It has changed the way we write and speak. My youngest son, six years old, says OMG now as a common expression. But, Tyler, I think linguists would disagree with you. They would say that linguistic change happens all the time, is inevitable, and that there's no better and worse, that the what we call proper English right now is a result of changes that have happened in the past, slang words being introduced. Nobody would argue that you should speak like an Englishman 100 or 200 or 300 years ago. That would be absurd. So to suggest that somehow the changes that are happening in our language as a result of technological forms of communication is bad, I think a lot of linguists would disagree with you and say it's inevitable. Change is going to happen, and it doesn't make it bad or worse. At some point in the future, the innovations that are happening will be considered proper English.
Yeah, well, I mean, I believe it all comes down to just evolution of everything, that everything needs to evolve, and that we're not the same that we were 200 years ago, maybe even 1,000 years ago. Everything was different. And just when it comes down to people itself, like different viruses and different just things that are evolving, penicillin used to be able to just like the miracle thing that everybody would just take it and they'd be fine. And now it doesn't do anything to us. And just different flus and stuff that's been happening throughout the years is just all changing.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Tyler. And I want to close actually with a posting of another Hopkinton High School student who was a big fan of technology. This person said, back in the day when the big obsession was telephones, us teens would come home and call up our friends and gossip for hours. Then parents would say, get off the phone. Why don't you just invite your friends over and chat with them in person? Nowadays, teens will be Facebooking with their friends for hours, and the parents will say, get off Facebook, you've been on there for hours, call your friend instead. This person says, someday there will be an even bigger, better, faster way of communications, and teenagers will be all over it, and then their parents will come in and say, why can't you just Facebook your friends instead?
Yes.
So, Max, I want to end with you by just looking ahead to next month when you will be joining us again, and our question will be, is there one true religion? Just very quickly prime the pump for us a little bit.
Well, Laura, this question next month is, as my grandmother might say, a real doozy, a real humdinger. It tries to examine from a philosophical perspective the competing truth claims made by the various religious traditions in our pluralistic society. Many of us, for example, find ourselves with certain faith commitments as members of a specific religious tradition. And in doing so, we think that our beliefs are true and our practices are right, or why would we engage in that religious tradition? So the question we might ask ourselves is this: how am I to understand the beliefs and practices of other religious traditions outside of my own? On the one hand, to say that they're all simply false is rather facile, for billions of people believe as fervently in these other religious traditions as I do my own, and it seems rather presumptuous to dismiss them as completely wrong. On the other hand, to say that they're all equally true is just as facile, for religious beliefs are not like flavors in ice cream, whereby you can choose whichever religious flavor you like, and it makes no difference at all. For these religious beliefs involve fundamental but competing claims about reality, the divine, human existence, and the afterlife, and they simply can't all be true at once without contradiction. Moreover, to say that they're all true would seem to put even the craziest of beliefs on the same footing as the great religious traditions of the world. Finally, to say that all religions are equally false, as an atheist might, does not get us off the hook, for atheism is simply another belief in competition with the others.
Well, again, Max, you'll be with us next month. I believe the show is December 22nd, so we look forward to that. And I want to thank you, Max, very much for being here. I also want to thank the students of Hopkinton High School, Concord High School, and Gorham High School who joined us for today's broadcast. The Exchange and Socrates Exchange are a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our producer is Dan Ankelis. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Megan Marcus. Our technical team for today's live audience broadcast includes Michael Saffel, Nick Wolis, and Steve Bothwick. We also had help from Becky Cates and Scott McPherson. And thanks also to our president, Betsy Gardella. Funding for the Socrates Exchange was provided by the New Hampshire Humanities Council and Bank of America. The discussion continues online for the next few weeks, so if you haven't contributed yet to the conversation, go to the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org, post your thoughts on technology, and then respond to other postings. Max Latona will be holding a live chat for the next hour. The executive producer of The Exchange and of the Socrates Exchange is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy. Thanks for joining us.